It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, here's a challenge for you. If you had to come up with a mathematical formula to predict the spread of nicotine use among teens, would you even know where to begin? I wouldn't. We'll talk with some high school students from Milwaukee about their very impressive showing in a nationwide math contest. First, if I asked you about the big policy priorities of Republicans and Democrats, you'd probably have two very different answers. For Republicans, you might mention tax and spending cuts. For Democrats, you'd probably point to spending on social programs like Medicaid. Our next guest says both sides should try to match their priorities with a real effort to get the national debt under control. And he says it's possible to make important investments in the nation's future and bring down the annual deficit at the same time. William Gale is an economist with the Brookings Institution. He also co-directs their Tax Policy Center, and he's the author of the new book, Fiscal Therapy, Curing America's Debt Addiction and Investing in the Future. Bill, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the annual deficit and the overall national debt. Why do you think politicians of both parties should be paying more attention?
Basically, things are okay right now. The economy's doing well. But if you look forward, and you don't have to look forward that far, we're facing rising and permanent deficits and permanently increasing debt relative to the size of the economy. That's ultimately unsustainable, and the sooner we do something about it, the easier and less abrupt the policy changes will have to be.
And you're not looking in your proposals in your book to necessarily zero out the national debt. You just want to bring it to a sustainable level. Is that right?
That's correct. There's no gain, and in fact, there's some loss in eliminating the debt. Debt serves some useful purposes. It helps us, you know, if we want to borrow money to fight a recession or finance a war or finance new social initiatives, we need debt to do that. So there's good debt and there's bad debt. The debt that we're accumulating is the bad kind. It's going to go increasingly to finance transfer payments and consumption rather than investment.
And you point out in the book that this is kind of a weird situation to be in with a long-term debt. In the past, we've had debts to do things like engage in really big wars like World War II, or to help us ride out, as you just mentioned, a recession. We're not really exactly doing either of those right now.
Right. Well, that's what's troubling. That's the glass half empty part of the current situation. The economy is doing great, but the deficit is still rising and the debt is still rising. So that if that's happening during the best of times, you know, you can imagine what will happen if the economy turns down. What seems like an ignorable problem right now could all of a sudden become a very big one.
But that's only part one of the problem you lay out in your book, that growing national debt. The other problem is, you say, even though we're racking up this debt, we're not making investments, needed investments that we need now to ensure a better future. What kind of things are you looking at there?
Well, there are some obvious issues like the lack of infrastructure investment. And you saw earlier this week that the president and the Democrats agree in principle, at least, to a massive infrastructure agenda. But our scientific research, our R&D, has also plummeted over time. And was a big part, I think, and others think about what helped the economy so much in the post-World War II era. And then if you look at a variety of social initiatives, investment in kids, investment in education, in making work pay, you can argue, I think, very reasonably that those should be thought of as investments as well, rather than just spending initiatives. And so I think we need to, as a country, invest more in kids. They are our next generation, and we're just missing opportunities to get them the education and the training and the skills that they need to make our economy work better.
Talking to William Gale about his new book, Fiscal Therapy, Curing America's Debt Addiction and Investing in the Future. Okay, there's our two-part problem, Bill, laid out. Growing debt, need to invest in the future. But how can we do both of those at the same time? That's what most of your book is about. Spell out the basics for us.
Sure. There's three components to the solution. One, as you mentioned, is investing more in children and infrastructure and so on. The second is there's no way to avoid reforming the major entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare. They're an enormous part of the budget, and we're not going to be able to reduce spending, you know, by cutting government workers' salaries or eliminating the Department of Commerce or those type of things. Where the money is Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the military. And if we want to find spending cuts, we're going to need to focus there. And the third part is basically we need to raise taxes, and in the process we need to reform the tax system to make it both more efficient and more equitable.
Let's before we take those in turn, let's look at the political challenge there. Saying we need to raise taxes is a non-starter for a lot of people in Congress and their core constituencies. Saying we have to make changes to Social Security and Medicaid if it involves any kind of cuts, well, that's hard to sell. How do you make a political case that's going to bring in people who are going to be almost instinctively opposed to at least part of what you just said?
I think that's a great question. Clearly, the politics are hard, and interestingly, the biggest moving parts, the taxes and Social Security and Medicare, are also the things where people feel most strongly about it. So it's not an accident that we ended up in the particular situation that we're in. But I think I think ultimately we need somebody to lead on this. We need a political leader who is willing to take the mantle and emphasize that what we are talking about is the welfare of our children and their children, that attaining a reasonable budget should be both a conservative and a liberal goal. And that there's a lot to be gained from fiscal reform, making the economy stronger, making it fairer, investing, you know, in everything from roads to children. So there's a lot to be gained, but, you know, the laws of arithmetic can't be repealed. If we want those things, we have to pay.
You point out that the people who will be most affected by a debt crunch whenever it happens are probably not old enough to vote yet. How do you make the case to the American public that we would need to make some sacrifices now, pay a little higher taxes maybe, risk cuts to our own Social Security payments down the road maybe, on behalf of this next generation?
It's a hard thing to do. Nobody wants to be the sucker left holding the bag and bearing the costs when everyone else gets off scot-free. So and part of the problem now is sort of the broader political situation where the two sides don't trust each other. But I think the key is to keep our eye on the prize, which is a better future. I mean, in a way it sounds cliche, but that's what we're talking about, the ability of society to generate higher standards of living, the ability of society to generate opportunity for people to move up the income ladder, and so on. And so I feel like the fiscal reforms will be necessary, but we can use them as an opportunity to achieve these other goals that we all think are appropriate goals.
Talking to William Gale, economist and budget expert with the Brookings Institution. His new book is Fiscal Therapy, Curing America's Debt Addiction and Investing in the Future. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of our taxing and spending priorities in the country? Are you worried about the long-term impact of the national debt, whether it's going to hit you or your kids or your grandkids' generation? Do you see there being a fair way to invest in social programs and deal with the national debt? Would you be willing to vote for someone who said, yep, we're going to raise taxes some, we're going to make some cuts to Social Security in the interest of bringing down the deficit and investing in social programs for the future, investments in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Bill Gale from the Brookings Institution about ways he says lawmakers can get America off of its reliance on big and growing debt and invest in social programs that help the public at the same time. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think a system that's fair to each generation, current and future, would look like? If you're a millennial or younger, are you worried about the impact the national debt could have on you, maybe cuts, risks to your Social Security in the future? Do you have questions for our guest about what he wants to do about taxes, spending, and more? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Bill, before we go to our callers, let's dig into what you're looking at with taxes. What are some of the changes you think we could be making now?
Well, these are interestingly changes that would be good ideas even if we didn't have a long-term fiscal issue. The most obvious thing we need to do in the tax side is implement a carbon tax to reduce carbon emissions and start dealing with climate change. I don't think it's enough to deal with climate change, but it's a significant carbon tax would be an important first step. And then income tax reform, basically, if you close loopholes, you can raise a significant amount of money among high-income taxpayers just by closing loopholes without raising rates. And similarly, with enforcing the tax system better, we could raise a significant amount of money. One out of every six tax dollars that are owed in a country are not paid. And the total every year is about $500 billion, which is more than we raise from the corporate income tax, for example. So there's a lot of tax evasion that we can go after. And then the linchpin in all this is we need to follow the lead of the rest of the world and establish a value-added tax, which is basically a national consumption tax.
Let's bring on our callers now. Grant is with us in Minocqua. Grant, hello.
Hello. My question, I guess, or comment to this section would be, how can you ask the American people or these people to make the sacrifices when Congress or the House of Representatives, when they continue to pass bills and spend money at a rate that's unsustainable? A lot of people, I believe, would be willing to help the cause if they knew it was going to fix the problem, but they just can't seem to grasp that spending. They can't get a hold on their own spending.
Grant, thanks for the call. What do you think, Bill?
That's a great question, and it goes back to this notion about the two sides don't trust each other. So you hear people say exactly what the caller said, I don't want to pay more taxes if they're just going to turn around and spend it. And so there's two ways to deal with that. One is to earmark new taxes for particular purposes. So like, say, we're going to have a value-added tax, and it's only going to pay for, say, health care. The other thing to do is to do what they did in the 80s and 90s, which is reach budget deals, bipartisan budget deals, where they raise taxes and cut spending. Not only do you have assurance that the increase in tax is not going to increase spending, it's reducing spending, but also because if the deal were bipartisan, you would have some security knowing that going forward, it wouldn't be undone. A lot of the stuff that gets undone, like Obamacare, is stuff that got voted on in a very partisan fashion.
Thanks for that call, Grant. We'll go now to Chris on the line in Milwaukee. Chris, hi.
Hi. The reason I'm calling is because I actually have been doing some research on Social Security and Medicare, and I was really surprised to find out that Medicare is partially paid for by general taxes, general funding. So when I've been talking to people about that, their response was, I really don't care. I paid for it. I don't want any cuts. I don't want any more taxes. And basically, it was the Republicans who were saying this. And, you know, you could say, but it comes, you know, you're paying for it with general taxes and it's going to affect your kids. And the response that I got was, I could care less. I earned this. So I just don't have a lot of hope at this point.
Chris, thanks for the call. Bill, what do you say to Chris's skepticism there?
It's another interesting comment. Medicare, part of it is paid out of a trust fund and payroll taxes, and part of it is paid from general revenues. And this feeling that people have that they've paid Medicare taxes their whole life and they've earned it is a very legitimate one, although the taxes only apply to one of the several parts of Medicare. But with both Social Security and Medicare, polls show that a large share of the population would rather raise taxes to sustain those programs than would prefer to cut benefits.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go now to Joanne with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. What I would like to ask is what your expert thinks on removing the cap from Social Security wages. You know what I'm talking about?
Presumably the payroll tax cap.
Mm-hmm. I assume that's it. Joanne, thanks. Bill, yeah, that's often talked about when it comes to Social Security's future.
Yeah, there are three things that every serious Social Security reform plan does. One is fix the way Social Security deals with inflation. One is to raise the normal retirement age. And the third is to raise the payroll tax cap. It got set in a way many years ago that has caused Social Security not to cover as much of high-income earnings as it used to. And given that there's been so much income growth at the top, we need to reset the payroll tax cap for both for equity purposes to make sure people are paying, but also for revenue purposes, too. So I agree we need to raise the payroll tax cap.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to William Gale from the Brookings Institution about his new book. It's called Fiscal Therapy, Curing America's Debt Addiction and Investing in the Future. We'll go back to your calls now. We've got James with us in Fountain City. James, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Say, you know, unless I missed it someplace in the early part of this discussion with dealing with the deficit and Social Security reductions, Medicare reductions, I didn't hear any discussion about reducing the military spending, which is like the largest in the world, for crying out loud. That would affect this thing much more than reducing Social Security.
James, thanks for the call. Bill, you mentioned military spending was one of the big chunks of our spending outlays in the United States. Where does that fit into your plan?
So in the past, you know, after World War II, after World War I, we returned to fiscal sustainability by cutting military spending dramatically. But military spending, I'm sure there's some stuff we can cut from it. But it's already pretty low. It's about 3% of GDP. The caller's right. It's high relative to other countries, but it's low as a share of the economy relative to what it used to be. So, for example, even if we eliminated defense spending, totally set it to zero, it would not be large enough to offset the growth in Social Security and Medicare. So defense spending, I don't think will grow all that fast in the future, but it's not the pot of gold that, you know, we can use to balance the rest of the budget.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to CJ with us now in Duluth. CJ, hi.
Hi, thank you for the conversation and taking my call. I have some skepticism, and I'm interested in your perspective around the politics of addressing these issues. In particular, I think that the situation with corporate influence in our political system is a huge hindrance to making reasonable or responsible decisions for the future. And I would just like to hear your take on election and campaign finance reform and how that fits into this conversation. Thank you.
Bill, thanks. Campaign spending and corporate influence.
Really interesting thought. I did not go into campaign financing in the book. It seemed a little beyond the scope of what the book was about, but I agree that it's an important issue. And if you look at taxes over time, you see that corporate taxes have come way down as a share of the economy, and tax rates on high-income households have come down as a share of the economy. And this is at the same time that the public consistently thinks that taxes on high-income households and corporations should be going up. This is for 20 years, a strong majority of public and Gallup polls have said this. So there's no doubt that the caller is right, that there's enormous amount of influence of these groups in the tax policy process, then that is definitely an obstacle.
Thanks for the call. One objection, Bill, and mostly from Republicans, is the idea that, okay, if you increase taxes on wealthy Americans and particularly on corporations, you slow down their investment in the economy, you slow down their economy overall, maybe you end up hurting tax revenues as a result.
Yeah, you know, let me sigh in response to that. I mean, there's people say that so often, and I think the answer is there are ways to raise taxes that are not going to hurt the economy. A consumption tax is not going to hurt saving or investment. Closing loopholes may actually help in terms of getting people not to invest based on tax reasons. There are changes to the corporate tax that we could make that would make it more investment friendly and raise revenues. And this ideological point that we can't raise taxes because it'll kill the economy is just wrong. Let me just give you one example. The OECD, the G7 countries have had about one third higher taxes than we have had since 1970. As a share of their economy, their taxes are one third higher, but their growth rate per capita has been identical to ours. And so that sort of shows that you can raise revenues without hurting growth rate. And of course, the big tax that they have that we don't have is the value added tax, the consumption tax that I'm advocating that we implement.
In our last 30 seconds or so, Bill, we've heard skepticism from our listeners. Do you feel optimistic that this plan, something like it, could happen?
I think something like this will have to happen at some point. I mean, I share everybody's cynicism about the political system. I read the same papers and see the same things. And in a way, things may well get worse before they get better. What I mean by that is, like, if a congressman knows that he or she has to cut Social Security benefits, they're going to do everything, they're going to try everything possible to show their constituents that they did everything they could to avoid this outcome so before they actually vote to cut benefits. So we might have a whole series of crazy proposals and, you know, ideological standoffs, but I feel like ultimately we'll have to address this issue, and then we'll be basically looking for the best way to do it.
Thanks for joining us today. That was William Gale. His new book is Fiscal Therapy. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.